You've seen him in some of your favorite shows, and now he's here in the studio, and we're putting the spotlight on his amazing career. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss this.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Are you supposed to be rapping right now? No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to. Maybe you don't want to. Man, I haven't heard this song in a while.
Yeah, it's a classic right
it, and it's sampled all the time. That's so awesome. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me here. I'm Ivana Williams, your host for today's segment of Spotlight On. And I have in the studio with me Mr. Melvin Jackson Jr. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, this is awesome. I have so much to talk about. Before we started the show, I was saying that, you know, when I was going through your press kit and your press release, I was like, I have to have this interview because your career, I mean, you've been in so many shows, and I was like, oh, snap, he was at, oh, snap, okay. Do you get that sometimes? Yeah, like, what's The Wire?
It's interesting because at the beginning when I did The Wire, like, a lot of, I was on a train and stuff, and people like, he looked familiar. Like, I would just, like, right. Let him play. Like, we went to school together. Like, nah, you went to, and I'm like, did you ever, you know, watch The Wire? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm like, you're like 15 years old. What, you don't watch The Wire?
Right.
So it was interesting just, you know, getting people to recognize you. And they don't know where from until, you know, it caught them like, oh, yeah, The Wire.
Yeah. So let's go back a little bit early on in your career because at first you started managing artists.
Yes.
How did you do that? At what age?
I was 18. About, it's my first year in college.
Okay, how?
I knew that. I love music. I always loved music. And I just, you know, felt like I wanted to help artists that couldn't get an opportunity. So I decided to manage artists. And you know, being young, I wasn't going to let that get in my way. So I just started making my business card, came up with a name, and then I just started hustling. And, you know, my first artist I forgot how I met him or whatever, but I ended up managing him, getting him into different, you know, performances, and then I managed my cousins, and it just went from there. And then I started, like, just end up from talking to the A&Rs on the phone to, like, sitting in their offices talking to, you know, the vice presidents of, like, the big records, like Jay Records and all those. So it was just all about being persistent.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, like, I knew what I wanted to do, and I emulated Puffy. Like, I was, people call me, like, the young Puffy, so I figured, like, I wanted to be a business person like him and just take over.
Wow. Okay. And so then you got into acting.
Yes.
And from there you were doing The Wire, just to name a few, rather. Right. You did The Wire, you and Everybody Hates Chris, The New Edition Story as Curtis Blow, and now you're going to be on a full biopic, right,
yes.
For Curtis Blow.
Yes.
That is so awesome. So at what point did you move to acting? When did you get from the business side to being in front of the camera?
I always say, like, I slipped and fell into acting because I never really pursued acting or thought about it. Until I was with a modeling agency, and then they had me audition for a PSA, and I no acting experience at all, no training. I went in there and I booked it, and from there, when I did the PSA, I was like, this is something I'm good at. Let me take a stab at it. And from that point on, I just really started watching movies like Denzel and Samuel Jackson. I started watching them not for the entertainment purpose, but learning, like, how can I implement my own style, but taking a little bit of what they have. And so I just started doing that and preparing myself and saying, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it seriously. And so I remember, like, I was telling my artist, like, nah, I don't really want to pursue acting because what about you guys? And he was like, we'll follow behind you. So he was like, you know, you make a name and then we'll be able to follow in the doors. And he was right. You know, with being on The Wire, it helped me get into more record labels, mm-hmm. you know, and get phone calls more than I before. But then the attention turned to me. They're like, well, what are you doing?
Right.
And so I feel like, you know, I love managing artists, love it. But of course, in the business, in managing, you don't make a lot of money. You know, the artists or the performers or whoever makes a lot of money. So I'm always like, if I'm working hard, why not get what I put in, you know, in return? So that's why, you know, when I was like, I sort of got the first check as an actor, I'm like, I like getting 100% right now than over 15 to 20%. So I felt like, you know, acting was what I wanted to do. And I pursued it and I came out to L.A. and the rest was history.
I've always wondered how that works because, like, so the artist gets paid first or is it everybody else and then the money trickles down to the artist? Like, that's always been confusing.
Well, with music, it goes from the songwriters to producers.
Right.
And, you know, the artist is probably like the last person to get paid, you know. And that's the crazy thing about it. Unless you're writing the songs, unless you're hands on, you're pretty much getting the last drop of the of whatever's left. And so the label gets recoups their money. And so that's just the interesting nature of the business. Like, you have to know the business. So I always tell artists, I said, learn the business. Don't just take my word for it. And for me, I always felt like I want to make sure that when I represent people, that I do it with integrity, to where they are feel respected in a sense that, well, like, I'm not just trying to take advantage of them. So I'm always have their best interests.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, it's not always the case. There's, you know, you hear horror stories about managers taking all the artists' money. They have no money. And I'm just like, I'm not that person. I can't look at myself in the mirror knowing that I did somebody wrong. So that was never my nature of business. So I think that's kind of why I am still here, because, you know, I could have been rich a long time ago, but I would have had to stab somebody in the back and steal and rob.
Oh,
and
Lord,
I was just
Jesus,
like,
no, please, no.
Nah. Right. That wasn't me, and that wasn't God's intent for me.
So I do have to ask, you know, going into your acting career, The Wire is also a cult classic. Like, every time people see, like, just The Wire, like, yo, that show, my God. So I do want to know, how was your experience on The Wire?
It was great. It's a backstory to it, because I always tell people this. I started off as an extra on The Wire. And that wasn't the way I wanted to, but I think it was intended for me to learn, because I kept submitting myself to be on there. And then for some reason, I got a phone call to be an extra. And I was like, how much I paying? $56. I'm like, I'm good. I'm making more in my job. Like, I'm okay. And so they kept calling me, and I was like, man.
Wait, they were paying $56 to be an extra?
No, $50 for 8 hours.
Oh, okay. I was like, no, I didn't hear that right.
$50 for like 8 hours. Okay. And so I was like, I'm good. So I just, after the third time, I was like, well, maybe this is a test. Maybe God's testing me. I don't know. So I was like, all right, I'll do it. And sure enough, I did it, and I learned a lot, and I met Wood Harris, and me and him exchanged numbers, and we connected on music, and just, like, it was just love. I just saw, like, I wasn't even sitting with the extras. I was sitting with the main cast, even though I wasn't supposed to. I was like, let me network.
Hey, squeeze in.
And so, you know, second season came, I started auditioning, and third season, after 15 auditions, and then the final callback, the casting director was like, go in there. She's like, do what you did the other day. You got this. And I went in and I owned it. I feel like Bernard was me. Bernard was my character.
Right.
And I went in there with the producers and everybody, and I nailed it.
That's dope.
And I got the phone call, and I was at work, and you'd have thought I won $1 million when they told me I got the job. And I was like, man. And walked on set, and it was just different. It was like going from being a janitor to now part of the company. Mm. It was a great experience.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
That sounds, oof. My heart. So you were also in the New Edition story.
Yes.
I loved watching that. Oh my God, I loved it so much. And I think it exceeded all of our expectations. I went in with an open mind. I didn't know what to expect, but it blew me away.
Yeah.
And you played Curtis Blow. How did you talk with Curtis beforehand, or you just went in and did it?
I actually didn't talk to Curtis Blow.
Okay.
I met him before. I didn't even know about the movie. But I didn't get a chance to talk to him. So it was pretty much I can't really tell the story. I got to tell this backstory. So I almost walked away from acting. I almost was like, let me put acting on the back burner. Let me be a producer full time. But of course, to be a producer, a working producer, you have to start from the beginning. You have to start from the bottom. Mm-hmm. So you have to be a PA, production assistant, and then go from that point on.
Yeah.
So I was willing to do that. I was willing to, the person that I am, actor, put that to the side, put my ego to the side, and say, let me start from the bottom. I'll be a PA. I'll do all these things so I can be a working actor, to me, a working producer, to help other people that don't have the opportunity. So I said, God, if this is what you want me to do, you know, I love acting, but if this is what you want me to do, let me know. Give me the sign and I'll do it.
So wait, even with being on The Wire and Everybody Hates Chris, you went back to being a PA?
I said I would.
That
was what my mindset was.
Right.
Because I wanted to do this producing full time so I can help other people that wasn't getting the opportunity. So I said, if this is what you want me to do, you give me the sign. The sign was the audition for the New Edition. I got the I was at my job, and I got the email, and I was like, oh, New Edition. Oh, Curtis Blow. Oh, the same day. So I had literally like an hour to get to the audition and really prepare. I didn't have time to prepare. I looked at the sides, and I just had to go off of a gut instincts. And so I went in there, auditioned. You know, got the pin saying that my agent was like, you know, you've been pinned by the networks. You're one of the top choices. A couple days later, got the call, and I got it. So with all that, I was like, wow, like this is like a recharge of my career, reboost. And this is before I've even walked on set. And I'm like, okay, now I have to deliver. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching, you know, Crush Groove. I'm right. watching Curtis Blow's interviews. I'm like, how do you know? Because I didn't go in there.
Get all the
right.
information.
I didn't go in there to the audition with an accent on anything. I just went in as embody him as a person.
Yeah.
So with all that, I was like, okay, now I have to deliver. Now I'm on a big scale. Now mm-hmm. I'm on BT. Now I'm working with my boy Chris Robinson. Mm-hmm. All these other people. Now I have to deliver. So going on set, it was just like amazing, amazing. Yeah. When I walked on, after they put me in hair and makeup, I embodied him. Mm-hmm. Like I became Curtis Blow. Like you, and that, I wasn't trying to be him. I just embodied him.
And where exactly did they shoot your scene?
We shot at the Globe Theater, which is downtown.
Okay.
In LA, and you know, it was one of the best experiences I've had as an actor outside of The Wire. Like it was because New Edition is one of my favorite groups, and I know a couple of the members. And, you know, here I am playing a legend, you know, person who opened up the doors for Jay-Z, yeah. Nas, all these people who was the king of New York at the time.
What a humbling experience.
So it was like, it was crazy.
How was the energy on set? I feel like y'all were just wilding out.
Energy was amazing. Everybody was professional. Everybody came to work. And then I got a chance to work with Wood Harris again. So that was like full circle. So it was just amazing. The kids... You saw it.
Yeah, I mean, they were amazing.
I was sitting there watching them like, I got to hate on these kids. Why? Like, they're so good. Like, and it was like, you saw them perform, and that was like, that's New Edition right there.
Yeah.
So shout out to Brooke Payne and Leon and all of them for getting them ready, because mm-hmm. that was not an easy task.
Yeah. So how did you go from that and being able to move on to getting a full biopic? Like, how, what?
Well, before the movie, New Edition movie came out, I had a conversation with Curtis. I'm like, you know, I would love to tell your story. Like, you have a, you know, people need to hear your story. Mm-hmm. I think that you should, you know, do a biopic. And so we had the conversation, and then, you know, the movie came out, and, you know, he had his, you know, ill will feeling about it. And, you know, we get it. You know, everything mm-hmm. is not always going to be in the favor of the artist. But we like, well, let's tell your story now. You know, people right. didn't get to see the full story, but let's tell your story, how you came about and other things that people don't know about. Mm-hmm. So me being a producer that I am, I'm like already thinking like, we need to tell your story. So when I started doing the Emmy campaign and people was watching the New Edition story, they're like, you need to tell the Curtis Blow story.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, in my back of my mind, I'm like, it's coming. And so
just wait.
So we began the conversation with him and, you know, getting him on board, getting an option agreement, and now trying to work on facilitating everything so that we can move forward to the next.
Because I was about stage. To ask, are y'all still in pre-production?
Yeah, we're in development right now. Uh-huh. So I have Ginuwine attached to it as well. He's a good friend of mine from D.C. And we just continue to build, and now we're just going into getting everything situated so we can go into the script phase and then go from there.
When I saw Ginuwine's name, I'm like, okay, so what is... is he going to be like a character? Is he in production? What is he
he's
doing?
He's going to be one of the characters in the movie.
Can he spill?
Not at this moment. It's gonna be some interesting people in the movie. I mean, we already know who was involved with the whole Curtis Blow, you know, from Fat Boys, Run DMC, mm-hmm. Who actually Reverend Run was actually his DJ. A lot of people don't know that. So it's a lot of history, a lot of things that that people don't know about Curtis Blow, even his relationship with Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz and all those people. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting.
So do you still keep in touch with Curtis?
Absolutely,
Blow?
Absolutely.
How often do y'all?
Every now and then. Like, I just talked to him a couple of days ago through text. And, you know, we just try to stay in touch and let him know what's going on. And definitely, he's very hands-on with this production. And it's his story. So we want to make sure we tell it right. And we get the best result in the sense of him being okay with what we're doing.
How did you become to embody Curtis Blow? Like, what were some of the characteristics that you had to pick up on? Like, some of the minor details?
Well, definitely it was the, it's the walk. It's I would say just his bravado, how you have it. Like, you're from New York, so you have that different feel. Yeah. So it's like, you know, New York guys, they territorial. It's just like, you know, what's
so
up,
hard.
Son? You know, what's up? And so with him, it was just like, he was the man back then. So I just had to live in the moment. I didn't have to do too much. And I think I did what I did without even having to think about it. Like, sometimes mm-hmm. the actors were like, okay, you need to do this. And it just happened. I embodied it. So where I don't even know what exactly I did. Chris Robinson brought that out of me. Mm-hmm. And so that's a great thing as a director, when they bring the best out of you and challenge you every time. We're like, boom, let's go. To where people who know Curtis Blow was like, that's Curtis Blow. And I wasn't trying to be him. I just embodied him. Mm-hmm. And that was the spirit of what was in the room. Everybody embodied each other. You know, Woody McClain embodied Bobby Brown. You know, Bashir Gray. You know, everybody, yeah. You know, Algie Smith embodied Ralph. He looks, you know what I mean? So everybody embodied each person that they're portraying. And that's the spirit of the film.
Yeah.
You know, that's nothing but God. And Robbie Reed spoke of that as well. And so I think when you have that magic in this room, in this project, there's nothing that you can say, take credit for, but say that's God. Because it took 10 years to make this film. And so here we are. Like, everybody was picked specifically for the role that they have. So it's no mistakes.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Wow, that's so dope. Did you ever used to rap or freestyle before?
Yeah, I used to, being around artists, I used to have me rapping. My alter ego is Jay Reed. So I said I want to do one album that was always on my list. One album and I'm done. I'm not trying to pursue an act career as a rapper, but just do my one great hip-hop album. It may take a year or two to make it, but
why
I just...
Why just one? Just to get it out? Just to express yourself? Why just one?
Just because I never wanted to be an artist because I know the business of it. I just wanted to make good music. And so I always looked at making music like making singles. So I say I have an album, I want my album to be singles. But I want them also, the songs to have a meaning. Like I have, you know, songs that I'm going to talk about, you know, suicide, depression, and all these things that has happened. And so, you know, I want it to be a message. If I'm just going to do it, I want to also have fun with it, and I want to make sure that it relevant to what's going on as well. So, I mean,
you working on that now at the same time, or that's going
to
come
I'm starting to start writing, okay. You know. So the thing is that I'm doing so much that I don't want to... I'm saying being an artist, that's a whole nother thing, you know, outside of what else I'm doing. So my focus... It is definitely a producer because I feel like it embodies everything, the actor side, the writing side of everything that I'm doing. And I feel like if I stepped out and try to be this artist full time, it's going to take me away from other things that need my attention a little bit more. So I'd say I just wanted just one album and then I'm good. I mean, whatever happens, something happens from there, then we'll go from there.
So with that, what you saying, you were rapping and freestyling. So I guess like trying to imitate Curtis Blow came a little bit easier than for you. Okay.
What?
How many raps do you have to memorize?
I didn't have to rap in the movie. And, I was upset about that because I was like, I really wanted to perform. So every time
so you're
I kept
not
getting
rapping
was,
it, you
know. Nah. Oh no, in the biopic.
In the biopic,
yes, absolutely. But I'm saying in the New Edition movie, I was.
No, I'm asking. Yeah, so in the biopic, like, how many do you?
We're still working
memorize?
On. We haven't done the script yet, so everything. But I'm sure you know it'll be a lot.
You up for the challenge?
I'm up for the challenge.
That's good. That's
I want to tell a story, so I want to make sure that it's done well. And, you know, I looked at, you know, as Trey out of Compton as the blueprint. You know, if you do something just as great as that, I think that's what the what's on the totem pole. So you got to meet that. So all the biopics after that have to meet that. And that's the gift and the curse in a sense.
Yeah.
But they did such a great job that you have to either be as good as them or better. That's just what it is. So you have to take it that serious.
Speaking of challenges, I know that right now you are very busy with the Curtis Blow biopic, but are there any other roles that you would like to play, you know, further in your career, like something that may be more challenging or something?
Eddie Murphy.
You want to portray Eddie Murphy?
Yes.
Ooh, I can see that. I see it. Why?
Because he's one of the reasons why I got into the business. He's one of the reasons why one of the reasons I got into acting as well as a comedy. And he just has a story. And people tell me I look like him all the time. I'm not trying to go out and look like him, but it's just like I get that.
I don't even be trying.
Even people that are like his family, you know. So it's just, you know, with that being said, I'm like, okay, people keep saying I look like him, then I'll portray him. And so now with that being said, that just means I have to do the work and try to get his voice, got his laugh. I got that. But the voice and all the things that he does, because he's such a big person. And
have you met him yet?
Yes, I have.
Oh, how was that?
It was good. Like at the moment, I don't think I was getting the Eddie Murphy thing as much. So it was like I met him. We didn't even take a picture. I just met him. Hey man, how you doing?
Okay.
I look forward to working with you one day. And that was kind of it. But I didn't even take a picture. I haven't seen him since because he don't really go out like that.
Yeah.
But I see like all his family and stuff like that. But yeah, definitely, you know,
besides biopics, is there something else? I don't know if you ever done any like crime, martial arts, some sci-fi, any other genres that you would like
I've always wanted to do like a martial arts film. Like I look at like John Wick and like stuff when you're shooting and you're doing hand-to-hand combat. Mm-hmm. Like I always wanted to do that in a dance movie is one of my things that I want to
okay.
do. I want to do a dance movie.
What kind of dance?
Like Step Up. I was in Step Up, so I've always, you know, like Step Up, Stomp the Yard, yeah. stuff like that. So like that's in the process. Like I'm already like working on getting with yeah. the choreographers to do, because I mean I've been dancing since I was a kid, but like professionally I want to get the whole, you know, the Chris Brown
hip hop yeah. and breaking right. and stuff. That's dope.
Yeah.
Okay. And you'd be the lead, or you'd be like teaching?
No, I'll be the lead. Young... Okay. Listen, I mean, okay. you know, listen, I mean, it's cool being supporting, but you know, you want to be the lead sometimes.
No, I totally understand. You know, sometimes when people are creating something, they're like, you know, I don't even have to be in it. I don't have to be the lead.
Certain things.
It don't have to right. be about me. So
now there's certain like... things that I don't have to be in it. That, you know, if I want to tell a story,
yeah,
I'll do that. But dance, that's a passion. I want to yeah. do that. I want to be in that.
So you're from D.C.
Yes.
And you moved out here to L.A. Well, how long have you been in L.A.?
10 years.
10 years. Yeah. I always ask people, you know, because it's very rare that I actually meet people who are from L.A.
Right.
And so I know, like, been out in D.C. I've been to D.C. before, too, and I really enjoyed the food. Yeah. So was it a culture shock for you, like, the food from D.C. and then coming to L.A.? I always had to ask people.
Not really a culture shock. You know what you're getting into. I mean, L.A. has a little bit more variety. But LA, I mean, D.C., you know, you got the chicken
got
and mumble sauce. Chicken and mumble sauce yeah. is our thing, carry outs. So that's the difference. You know, there's no carry outs out here. There's, you can't go and get you. Like, I went home recently and I was like, man, I missed the carry out. I'm like looking at the menu, like, these things are inexpensive. Like, L.A., you don't have that. Yeah. So that's the things you miss.
L.A., you got like seafood. Postmates or something.
You have the seafood.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was definitely like, okay. I miss the seafood. I miss all the things that my grandma used to
yes.
cook.
That's when you said seafood, because I'm from, you know, I'm from Texas, and I have, you know, family in Louisiana, so it's always like, I can't really get crawfish. Well, I can, right. but, like, it's so expensive out yeah. here, you know? So I really do miss the seafood, man. And you did have a stint, actually, in Pakistan and Turkey.
Yes.
How did you end up there?
Well, my mom used to work for the government, so I got a, you know, when I was a kid, about 8, I went overseas to Pakistan first, lived over there for about 4.5 years, and then had a great experience over there, international school of Islamabad, and just, you know, being
wow.
around different cultures
yes.
and learning the language and eating the different foods, like your system had to get used to the food. You're like, wait a minute. But it was just definitely a great, great experience. I think it changed who I am as a person, and that's who I am now, where I'm like, I don't feel like I'm just one dimensional. I'm like, I'm different. I can be in so many different, you know, I can be international, because I know what that feeling is like and how it interact with other people
yeah.
of different races, different cultures. And then I went over to Turkey after that, and I still keep in contact with all my friends that I met over there. And it's just we're just a big happy family, and I think I'm thankful for that, you know,
yeah.
because we you know, we had maids, we had gardeners, we had, you know, guards and all the things. You would think that we were rich when we went over there. We just lived like kings.
And this was for your mom's high profile job.
Yeah, we're just like we just lived like kings and queens over there. So where it's like now my mentality is like
I know the CIA. What was the job?
I know what I want. You know, it's like now I know what I want in life, and you know, it's not about being spoiled. It's about
yeah.
having the things that, you know, the final things in life, but making sure that you stay grounded in it.
Mm.
And, yeah, just...
So how was the food? What was your favorite dish, I guess, out there?
What was it? I would say... I used to go to this place called Blackbeard, and they had, like, this chicken. Sometimes, like, curry chicken. I used to do curry chicken a lot with naan, which is a different type of bread.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have these things called pakoras, which we used to make. It's like...
What is that?
It's almost reminds you of pork skins, but a little bit different. They're not as hard. But they're really good. Like, we used to make those in school.
Okay.
But, yeah.
That is very interesting. Because I always want to know, like, how is the food in other cultures? Because I wouldn't really try it out here. I'd rather, like, travel to
yeah.
try it. That is very interesting. So, yeah, like I said, I just ask all the time, like, how is your experience with food out there? Because it seems wild.
Yeah.
Dope. So, what would be some of the advice that you would give younger people? Because... You switched careers. You
right.
were more like business minded,
yeah.
you know, and then you, like I said, you went into acting. What is the advice that you would give other people who are looking to step from behind the desk or
right.
the cubicle or whatever and just really get out there and get into acting or writing, directing,
right.
producing?
My goal is, like, I have this movement now. I say dream big. And you cannot think small. You cannot be your own enemy, in a sense, so where you're getting your own way. It was like, well, I can't do this because such as I don't have this, I don't have these experiences, I don't have that. I would say, just take the bull by the horn and do it. If it's something mm-hmm. that you want to do, don't put it off to tomorrow. Go and do it. Be responsible, of course, but do it, because you always have those regrets, like, oh, I should do this, I should, but no, yeah. no one's gonna take me serious. And I just didn't, you gotta stop caring about what other people think or what other people say, because when you do that, then you look for validation. Mm-hmm. And I say you don't need validation from anybody but yourself and God. Mm-hmm. And so if you already going with that mindset, like, I can do it, my mom always told me, you know, these things, you can do anything you put your mind to. So that's been my mentality. Mm-hmm. So if it's something that I wanna do, if I put my mind to it, I'm gonna get it done. It may take me 3, 4, 5 years, however long. But I'm going to get it done.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. It's about going out there and getting it done and making a goal for yourself and then living out that goal.
Was there any ever, like, nervousness or anxiety whenever you switched from, you know, managing to going into acting?
No, because
like any negative feelings like, oh, I hope this works. I don't know if it's going to work.
Nah, because as a kid, I've always kind of been fearless. Okay. So I just think that if I know that that's something I want to do and I'm good at it and I'm passionate about it, then there's no fear. Only thing that was fear as far as comedy when I did stand up. That because now you're on stage. You're on stage and now you have to be funny.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And so that's kind of why, like, I'm like, if I'm not going to do it right, if I'm not mm-hmm. going to put all of it in it, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to get up stage and be terrible. You know, I haven't got booed, but there's been times where I'm like, oh, it's a little quiet in here. Yeah. So what about those Redskins? You know what I mean? You just kind of. Yeah, it's just tough. So that's the only thing that's really been intimidating for me is stand up, but I love it.
Yeah.
And so that's why I keep continuing to do it, because it's a love and you got to face your fears.
That's definitely on my bucket list. Like, I want to try stand up, but my issue is dealing with like the hecklers and stuff. Like, I don't want to be out there and, you know, I'm feeling good and stuff, and then some drunk person's like heckling me. Right. So how often did you do stand up?
I did it. I was going doing stand ups probably 3 to 4 times a week sometimes, and then like I was doing it.
Was this early on in your career?
No, this is to me. The last time I did it was also two, three months ago. Like I've been I've been doing stand up since 2014. I want to say.
Okay.
Yeah. But I kind of like say I pulled back because I was like I want to, you know, do it right, and I just doing too much. I had too much on my plate, and stand up, it's kind of like it's this new career. You're pretty much starting from the bottom. You have to pave your way. You have to build your time. You go from 3 minutes,
the bars
yeah,
and
3 minutes to 5 minutes to 10 minutes to like you're like, man, you thinking like 3 minutes is quick on stage? It's not. It's like okay. And so you just have to learn, and you have to, like, I'm always watching. That's why I was watching Delirious and watching Raw, because, like, you have to have that timing. You have to have everything, and just like acting. And so that's what helped me with the comedy. It's like I look at it as a play, as a scene. You know, these are my audience. This is my audience that I get to win over or lose. So it's like, do I want to win them over or do I want to lose them? So you got to pick and choose what you say and what you do, and you got to make it like a conversation. And I think when you make it a conversation, then they're drawn into what you're saying, what you're doing. So it's like, okay,
how do you feel about the state of comedy now, like with black comedians? Because we had a huge rise, and then it was a downfall. Is it like an ebb and flow? How do you feel now?
I mean, it's still a lot of great comedians out there. I just think that some people don't see them because they're not televised. There's a lot of things. But if you go to these comedy clubs, there's some funny African-American comedians that are like, oh my God, like these dudes are hilarious. Like there's you know, there's a couple guys, like I remember doing a show, putting a show together, and I just remember calling people and having to come on my show, and that was like one of the funniest shows I've ever seen, because everyone was so laughing. People were laughing so hard they were running out of the auditorium that we had, and it was laughing so hard my head was hurting. Like, it was just that great of a night, and people still talk about it to this day, and I'm like, how can we? I wanted to film it to be able to pitch that, because it was such a great night.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, maybe we can try to duplicate that. But it was such a great night.
I would love to, because I feel like now we only see like one or two mainstream black comedians here and there. And it's I know it's like a plethora of them out there. But I'm like, well, come on, where they at?
Exactly.
You know, so I don't know. I guess it's something that takes a while. It's just something that kind of comes and goes. I don't know.
When anything, you know, like, you know, Kevin Hart's the biggest thing. And then, you know, somebody else is going to be the biggest thing. Then it's just a wave. It's everybody, you know, has their moment. Everybody has their shot. Like, you know, like it was the Eddie Murphy, then it was the Richard Pryor and the Fred Fox, all those people, like Dave Chappelle, like everybody has that moment. But then when they're all coming together, like you'll see the Chris Rock, the Dave Chappelle and Eddie, you know, and Kevin Hart all joining forces, like, you just, it's power in numbers.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it is. So I'm like, why is it one at a time? Right. That's what I'm...
But it's what we, sometimes what we see. But yeah, if you look out there, there's actually people doing shows that's bringing other new comedians up. You know, like Kevin Hart has Heart of the City. So all these different things you have that are, you know, you, people necessarily always don't see. But there's people opening that door for new comics. Mm-hmm. And what I love about the comedy community is that people will lift each other up. Like Alex Thomas is a good friend of mine, and you know, like he gave me, you know, to him when I first wanted to do comedy, he was like right there with me. Michael Collier gave me my first, you know, shot. So everybody's just like, they just want you to win. Mm-hmm. There's not too many people that just want you to lose, unless they're, you know, just haters. But for the most part, for me, I have so many people in the comedy world that just want me to win, and in the industry as well. So that's been a good thing for me.
Okay.
And when you put out good energy, you get it. You get it in return.
Do you have a preference between drama and comedy?
Dramedy,
put them together.
Comedy works a lot, you know, in my favor, in a sense, just because it's right. It's like you can just be off the cuff and make it happen. Drama, you know, I do good in drama too. It's all about, you know, the scenes and everything. You really have to be focused in what it is and delivering and making sure you know your objective. So drama takes a little bit more out of you, you know, whether you gotta cry, whatever you gotta put yourself in. But I don't, you know, I think I love comedy because I'm always like to make people laugh.
Yeah.
So I, if I had to choose, you know, comedy has definitely been a lot of opportunities have been happening for me in the comedy sense. But I love drama. Drama is always, you know, that was my go-to in the beginning. So always got to go back to square one.
And I always like to ask actors, you know, when it comes to you developing and honing your craft, really, there's the classes.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't really, they just think, yo, let me just get some headshots and just send some stuff out. Maybe I can do a couple commercials and I'm famous.
Yeah.
But like, you really have to do the classes and the networking, the workshops, all types of stuff. It's a lot of money that you have to pay into yourself.
Absolutely.
For your career. And I think that's probably something that I didn't really know as much. You're constantly paying for yourself, you know? It doesn't stop. So did you take a lot of classes early on in your career? And if so, like, what was a class that really helped you
To
hone your craft?
It was crazy because I didn't take acting classes until maybe 12 years into my acting career. I did that for the purpose as far as saying I want to take an acting class because I had this mentality. I don't know if it was an ego thing. It was like, well, I don't have to take no acting classes. I didn't take acting classes to get in this.
Got lucky.
Yeah. I was like, you know, that was just being, you know, being blessed and me knowing, okay, even I don't know, didn't have professional training, still taking it serious and still doing the work to study. And so for me, it was like, okay, I need to make sure that I better my craft. If Denzel's got an acting coach, if everybody, all these other people who I look up to have an acting coach, what makes me any different or any better?
Mm-hmm.
So I started working one-on-one with the acting coach, which was amazing. And she was like, you know, she's like, you're good. She's like, she's these certain things she wanted me to get better at, you know, in far as the auditioning process. But she was like, you got it. You good. So that was good hearing that. And so because you want to get better, you know, it's like Michael Jordan, it's like Kobe, like you can't get better and if not practice. So if you don't practice your craft, how can you get better?
Yeah.
So that's why I started taking it serious, and now I have an amazing acting teacher that I work with now called Sue Hamilton, which is phenomenal. And she just has a different way of for you to, mentality when you go on audition. She's like, don't worry about trying to book that role. You're going in to book the room. If they like you as a person, they'll love you as an actor, you know, in a sense of you have to, because sometimes people can be a great actor, but a jerk. So if they love you as a person, they'll be able to see the actor in you. You know, of course, you still got to do the work. You got to be good.
Absolutely.
For her, she says, you know, have fun or quit. It's either you're going to have fun at what you're doing or quit doing it.
Mm.
And so that's always been the mentality. Like for me, it's like I'm having fun. When I go on auditions, it's just different now.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get it, I'm not mad like I used to be. I'm like, oh, I didn't get it. If I don't get it, it wasn't meant for me.
Yeah.
But if I do a good enough job to where they remember me, they'll bring me back for something else. And then I book I won the battle.
Yeah.
So it's just different now. And you make sure that you just do the work.
Yeah.
You know, know your objective. What is it that you're trying to convey when you're doing your scenes? What is it that you're trying to tell the audience that they don't know? So you have to tell them what it is that you want them to know.
Tell the story.
So
So, you know, diversity is like a really hot topic right now, you know, in acting. I hope that this time it's something that's here to stay, because I know when I was younger, there were so many, you know, African-American shows, huge, like UPN was booming.
Yes.
Which shows, and BET had more content. But then it just kind of faded away. But now we're seeing it again. I'm seeing all types of content that I never thought I would see again. How do you feel about seeing African-American actors now?
It's amazing. And the thing is I think that, you know, it should never get to the point to where you don't see it. Like, we had so many great shows back in the day where it's like, you can count on your hand how many. But now, and then it started depleting where it's like, oh my God, like, we don't have anything.
I was like, what's going on?
And then the shows that we do have, it's like, you can have that back, you know, type of thing. So now it's amazing when you see not only black shows, but you see great writing for black African-American people, like, you know, Sterling K. Brown's on This Is Us, which is an amazing show.
I love that show.
And they represent us in such an amazing way where it tells a real life story between a husband and wife in a black relationship. Like, it's
real.
Did you
watch the latest episode?
No, I haven't seen it. Don't tell me.
Oh, dang.
So
hurry up.
it's just, you know, one of those things where, you know, I even got a chance to audition for the show. So I was like, oh my God, like, it's just amazing when you see that type of writing for us.
Yes.
And we're winning Emmys and Oscars and all this stuff off.
We're getting recognized for it.
And so it's just time. I think it's time to where, you know, diversity is necessary, is needed. And I hope that it continues. And I think we're getting more opportunities. Like, you have The Black-ish. Now they're having spinoffs, and you having The Mayor, which, you know, is a phenomenal show. And it's not just African blacks are getting opportunity, but new faces, where the mayor is a new face, you know, Brandon. And that's what we need. We need we need to get the opportunities, and we need to prove that we deserve the opportunities and make sure that we live in a sense to where we do good work so that it now becomes a wildfire.
So you feel like it's here to stay this time?
I believe so, because now it's put out there. It's been stuck on the wall, and now we get to look at it every time. So when it's not there, that we're like, wait a minute, where's the diversity at? Where is it? Yeah. Now that it's the elephant in the room. So you have to pay attention to it.
Yeah, because when I was younger, you know, when I was a teenager, it just felt like I was happy to see other black faces on there, but something about it just felt like a fad. And obviously, I mean, it was. Like, we weren't putting money into these shows anymore, and it went away. So I absolutely feel like it's here to stay, too. There's been so many shows that I'm like, I have to watch this. I have to watch that. Like, on Hulu, I don't have cable now, but like, I have added so many shows on Hulu. Like, my nights are busy, and it's because I'm watching shows with people who look like me, and I want to watch this, you know? So that's really dope. So going back to the Kurzweil biopic, because I know we have to wrap up here pretty soon. We can expect this in 2018, correct?
Possibly.
Possibly.
Yes. You never know. I mean, you know, you put a date on something, and maybe, you know, you don't know when it may happen. It's all about, you know, getting all the logistics together and then, you know, going from there and hoping, you know, we all don't have other projects lined up, you know, like I'm be shooting the DPG for Life movie, I'm playing Corrupt. And the other things that I'm doing as well. So I just want to make sure that we don't rush it because that, you know, a lot of people talk about other projects that have been rushed and they're like, oh, I don't want to rush anything. No. You know, I want to give it its time. The script has to be phenomenally amazing, Oscar-winning script. Oh, and the performances have to be amazing. So we just got to make sure that everything is taking its time and we let it breathe.
Yeah, one thing that really stuck out to me when I was reading through your info is that it has a stamp of approval by Kurzweil. Yes. Like, that is so important.
Right.
So that afterwards, you know, we don't have to hear him saying, like, well, I don't like this, I don't like that. This, you know, they didn't portray me right, because that does happen sometimes. You know, people don't get the stamp of approval.
Exactly.
And there's such, like, negativity that surrounds the project now with, you know, the gossip and rumors. So, like I said, when I read that, that meant a lot to me. I really enjoyed seeing that. Once it's done, like, I know y'all are still in pre-production. What is it that you want people to know?
I want people to know him as a man, like, who his trials and tribulations, talking about, you know, how he influenced the hip-hop world. He was the first, first rapper to sign a major deal with Mercury Records, the first, you know, rapper to go over to tour overseas. Like, he became commercial. Like, NBA asked him to write this basketball, you know, so he wrote that song, "This is, I'm playing basketball," and then he had a Sprite commercial.
That song is everywhere.
So yeah, he opened the doors for rappers, like Jay-Z, like Nas, like Lil Wayne, and all those, you know. So had it not been for him, we wouldn't have the rappers that we have today. And, you know, it started, he was one of the people it started with. And so, you know, Reverend Run was his DJ. Like, that's crazy, you know? And now Reverend Run is Run DMC and all. So it's just, it's so much. It's so much. And if people haven't seen Crush Groove, you need to go watch Crush Groove, because it'll open up the doors for a lot of what you're going to see in the movie as well, with everybody that was involved. So we're definitely, you know, we want to tell a great story. We want to win some awards. Like, I'm blessed to be considered for Image Awards right now, portraying Curtis Blow.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm campaigning right now. They start voting October 25th. And then nominees are announced, I think, November 13th.
Okay.
So it's some other awards I'm being considered for, so I'm definitely gonna be talking about that shortly.
Awesome. But you have a lot on your plate, so what are some other things that we can probably see from you in the next month, year, coming years?
Well, I just finished shooting. I'm still in post-production of this film called The Price of Fame. It's a Christian-based film about the industry, dealing with the casting couch, dealing with situations like, you know, agents and managers telling a male actor not to promote that he's married so he can sell, you know, more tickets at the box office. And then the wife going, you know, she gets sucked into it. She's like, okay, we can't turn on his money. And then it gets a whole nother situation happens out of that. And then, you know, my character, the manager, is kind of trying to be shiesty in certain ways. It's all about not trying to compromise your faith, you know, in the sense of for the price of fame. You know, sometimes we will compromise our faith to be rich and famous, knowing that it's not right. But because we want that fame, we want that fortune, mm-hmm. we feel like, okay, we're going to worship man instead of worshiping God. And it just tells a story of different people intertwining, almost like Crash, and how they intertwine, their stories intertwine.
Yeah, I like that movie. Okay. Is there anything else that we can expect from you coming up?
Yes. I wrote a project called Love Is Never Fair.
Okay.
And it's a basketball romantic love story. Okay. And, you know,
folks love those.
Yeah. Love and Basketball is one of my favorite movies. So it inspired me to write this film, you know. And I think definitely, you know, people who love that movie will love this movie. And we had a table read for it, and it was great feedback. It was a lot of laughter, which, you know, I wasn't expecting as a writer to get that type of feedback. But, you know, I definitely, you know, it surprised me. And so now it's like, now let's get it even better so that when we shoot it, it's like people will fall in love with it.
Dope. So for the people who want to reach you, where can they find you?
MelvinJacksonJr.com, Melvin Jackson Jr., Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Everything is Melvin Jackson Jr., the brand of Jackson Jr.
Dope. Well, thank you so much for meeting with us. Again, everyone, I'm Ivana Williams, and this has been Spotlight On with Mr. Melvin Jackson Jr. He has so much coming up. I'm very excited for your career, honestly, truly. Thanks again for joining us here on AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On. Take care.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.